Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks so much for joining me. You know, first of all, I want to thank Blue Lives Matter for making this show possible. The news and information website is bluelivesmatter.blue. That's where you want to go for all of your law enforcement news and information. Also, the people at warrior12.com who create the Blue Lives Matter t-shirts, the greatest designs you can imagine. They were incredibly popular at Police Week this week, and some really good looking stuff. So check out warrior12.com. It's got all the products for Blue Lives Matter. Now, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room, headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
You know, sometimes things happen. I read a story that just boggles my mind. And this week was one of those events. I would have to say that I just had to scratch my head when I read that a large peace award, the Sydney Peace Prize, it's being awarded to, I'm going to read the names to you, and then I'm going to explain why it's significant. Patrice Cullors, Opal Tometi, and Elisa Garza. Now, why would I even raise my eyebrows at this? Well, it's because these three women are the ones who created Black Lives Matter movement. Yes, the same movement that has called for the killings of police officers all over the world, not just in the United States, is being awarded what would be considered a prestigious peace prize. Now, in their press release, the Sydney Peace Foundation said that it honors people each year who are, quote, leading global voices that promote peace, justice, and nonviolence. What? It also said they chose Black Lives Matter, quote, because of the movement's dedication to its bold and visionary strategies, unquote. Are you kidding me? The same three women, who, by the way, have called for the downfall of the United States, in case you're not familiar with the movement and how it started, these three women out of San Francisco area, after Trayvon Martin's death and then the incident at Ferguson with Michael Brown, they created the false narrative of institutionalized police racism. Now, of course, Trayvon Martin had absolutely nothing to do with the police. But somehow, they managed to massage the whole rhetoric into being somehow blaming the police for what happened. Of course, Trayvon Martin was attacking an individual who was carrying a concealed weapon. He was a man who was on the neighborhood watch. And after Trayvon Martin was smashing his head into the sidewalk, he was shot and killed. The police did nothing but investigate it. And the grand jury and district attorney decided that the individual acted in self-defense. And then we had the incident in Ferguson, where Michael Brown, who had committed a robbery, then tried to take a police officer's gun and then attack the police officer, Darren Wilson, who subsequently shot him. That was investigated by like every single human being in the world. And the false narrative of hands up, don't shoot was born. And Black Lives Matter picked that up and ran with it and ran with it and ran with it. And having a compliant media didn't hurt them. And they were able to take this narrative and create this bedlam all over the United States, much of it funded by none other than George Soros. George Soros, of course, is an individual who is a mega millionaire, I think billionaire, who has evidenced his strong antipathy for the United States of America and wants to see the government fail. So we have these three women who have now been given this prestigious prize for creating an organization that whose favorite chant is, what do we want? Dead cops, when do we want them now? And pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. So you tell me, if you think that this group of women deserves to get a peace prize by a organization that has effectively spit in the eye of every law enforcement officer in the world, not just in our country, because Black Lives Matter has chosen to send out a violent anti-law enforcement message, not just in the United States, but in other countries as well. So that is my view from the blue on that. But of course, I'm not done yet. For all your news and information about everything that's going on in law enforcement, the website that you want to go to is bluelivesmatter.blue. And that is where the official website of Blue Lives Matter is. You will read articles written by cops and police supporters. You will find out everything that's going on in the law enforcement community. You can show your support by becoming a member of Blue Lives Matter. And there will always be additional opportunities and information that you will find entertaining and informative. BlueLivesMatter.blue. If this was television and you could see me right now, you know that I'd be wearing a Warrior 12 t-shirt. And you're asking yourself, what the hell is a Warrior 12 t-shirt? That is, unless you've been listening to this show for a while. Then you would know that they are the coolest police t-shirts around. Warrior 12 is the clothing line for Blue Lives Matter. So we got the Blue Lives Matter t-shirts. We have all kinds of other different logos and sayings on them. And they are very, very cool. So go to warrior12.com. That's warrior12.com. You could check out the entire line and wear some pretty cool shirts. My second story on View from the Blue is somewhat different than what I normally talk about, because I want to talk about an incident that occurred in Portland, Oregon. It seems like I'm always talking about Portland, but this is in a different way, because there was a really disturbing set of circumstances that put into play a devastating couple of murders. An individual who was verbally attacking two Muslim women on the light rail train in Portland just days ago. He was vehemently and venomously cursing them, screaming at them, clearly in hatred of the Muslim religion. Now, three people who were simply citizens, simply good people, saw what was taking place and went in to intervene. I'm going to read their names. Ricky John Best, Talison Namki Meche, and a third victim, Micah Fletcher. Ricky John Best and Talison Namki Meche were stabbed to death by the suspect. And Micah Fletcher was also stabbed, but he is expected to survive. This is incredibly disturbing, and at the same time, shows the bravery of American citizens who are willing to stand up for doing the right thing. The fact of the matter is that the individual who was verbally attacking these two Muslim women was a man filled with hate, disgust, and instead of using the proper channels of his right to free speech, simply chose two innocent women to attack and to frighten and to threaten. And then these other individuals stepped up to the plate. Ricky John Best and Taliesin Machy and Micah Fletcher, they stood up for the right thing. They stood up for someone who couldn't defend themselves, and they were attacked because of it. This is something that is so anti-American, so disturbing, that this deserves our attention. Although it's got nothing to do with law enforcement, it shows what America is made up of. And I have said this before, I'm going to say it again, because there was evidence once again just yesterday about Americans and how they stand up for the right thing so often. There was a Dallas police officer, this occurred yesterday, that was in pursuit of a drunk driver and lost control of his vehicle or was rammed by the vehicle, I'm not quite sure which, and the vehicle rolled down an embankment 30-some feet into a ravine. And caught on videotape were a huge amount of citizens who ran to the aid of this police officer. And you could tell the concern that they had. This was a life and death situation. The officer was critically injured. He was trapped in the car. And the people who literally ran down this embankment and placed themselves in harm's way as the vehicle could have caught fire. The engine was still running at the time. They didn't give a thought to their own safety. They didn't give a thought to the fact that they might be facing danger themselves. They saw a police officer in trouble, and they stepped in, and they did their very best to save the life of this officer. This shows Americans at their very best, just like the poor unfortunate victims on that train in Portland who went to the aid of two innocent people. This is what America is all about. And I don't know about you, but I can tell you this. I'm proud to be an American. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue for today. Thank you for tuning in. We've got a great interview with someone who's really making a difference to the lives of police officers in Louisiana.
We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do, include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
With me today on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a law enforcement professional who has retired from law enforcement, but still has not stopped giving back to law enforcement. Pat Englade is the chairman of the Capital Area Law Enforcement Foundation in Louisiana. He is the former chief of police of Baton Rouge and a 32-year police veteran. Pat, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio.
Sure, my pleasure, Randy.
You know, I just got back from Baton Rouge just a couple weeks ago. And I attended, I attended the memorial service for your fallen officers down there. And it was very moving, you know, watching the families receive the, you know, the single rose at that memorial was a very moving thing to see. And you clearly have not stopped giving. Tell me about the Capital Area Law Enforcement Foundation.
Well, we saw when there was a case in Baton Rouge, and it probably made national headlines. It was a incident here in Baton Rouge, July the 5th of last year, 2016, where two police officers got involved with a suspect named Alton Sterling. There was a scuffle that took place, and during that scuffle, Sterling was shot and killed by the police officers. Directly after that, there were a number of protests, and I guess they tried to call them rallies, but they came more close to just civil unrest, to be honest with you. And the police here had to get together, and they were marching on police headquarters. And one of the things that I noticed during that process was that I didn't see Baton Rouge police in the forefront of the protest area. So I called someone on the force and asked them. They said, well, I call it riot equipment. There's a new name for it, but I'm not very, you know, politically correct, so I'm still going to call it riot gear. It was antiquated and said probably before you, the person that bought it. And that disturbed me quite a bit that we didn't have adequate protection for our guys at that point. So I got together with a couple of friends of mine, and we decided to raise some money and purchase some equipment for BRPD's riot equipment. Well, in the process of doing that, July 17, 2016 occurred, where six police officers, three police officers, three sheriff's deputies were shot. Three of them were killed here in Baton Rouge. And it just changed the whole game and our whole plan of what we were going to do next. And that's basically the beginning of the evolution of the Capital Area Law Enforcement Foundation.
Well, that, I can't think of a more necessary endeavor. And I know that you guys got hit really hard with that disgraceful protest, and then the murders of your law enforcement officers. I got together with several of your police officers and deputies at the law enforcement memorial just a couple weeks ago, and I can see how necessary it is to create a foundation like this. Now, you've had some very good success with it, considering it's a very new endeavor.
We have. It's one of those things, Randy. It's almost like nobody will tell us no. I think that everybody's heart goes out to the families. We have adopted those families as part of our foundation. Not only do we supply law enforcement with the equipment they need to protect themselves, but we also assist the families of law enforcement in times of crisis. We've done a lot to help the families of our officers who were killed. We've done a lot to help Nick Touye's family. Nick's one of the deputies who was shot, but is still rehabbing in the Houston area. And of course, those costs go through the roof on something like that. So anything we can do to further assist those guys and any future law enforcement issues and crisis, if an officer or has family issues where maybe their child needs some kind of treatment and they're not able to pay for it, we can step in and we can help with something like that. Anybody that's in law enforcement knows that, especially in a police department, their capabilities of being able to help are very limited because of limited budgets. And we realize that. I wish I would have had this when I was chief, because it's just one of those things that you want to be able to help your people, and you just can't. You don't have the ability to do that.
Well, is it because of the political situation that they are not being outfitted with the proper gear for civil disturbance?
That's a good question. I think maybe some priorities have been messed up here. I'm not going to put the blame on any particular person, because that's not what we're doing. when we went out and found exactly how many officers were not equipped with the proper protective equipment, I mean, and mostly we're talking about vests. And one of the first things we did was go out and buy a ballistic vest for those guys that did it. Not every department has those.
Wait a minute, hold on a second. Are you telling me that there were police officers in Baton Rouge that have not had been given body armor?
That's correct. If they had, it's expired for years.
That's shocking to me.
Well, it was shocking to us when we started this. We didn't know it was going to evolve into this and there was going to be this much need. Now, we're not a huge area. I know you've been here before and you understand the geographical area here, but we're not a huge area. But we will put 1,000 vests on police officers before the end of the year. That's a lot of vests for this size area.
That's a huge amount of vests. That's a massive cost.
It is. And we have raised up to this point about $500,000. We hope before the end of the year, our goal will set at $1 million, and we hope we'll get there.
Well, you're going to need that kind of money to outfit that many
police officers. That's what I tell everybody. I said, we're spending every nickel we got. We have no administrative fees whatsoever. All our monies go directly into purchasing vests. We made connections locally and even internationally here with people to help us with the vest and the pricing and those sort of things. So we've done our due diligence trying to get all this stuff, and we're getting the best. There were people that were coming out and trying to help and buy and vest, and a guy told me that, you know, I can get all the vests you need for $200. And I said, well, not the kind I'm going to put on a police officer, you can't. I mean, our vests run $600-$700 on Kevlar, and the ballistic vests are running in the neighborhood of $400. And that's a pretty good price.
Yeah, that is a pretty good price. So are you just outfitting Baton Rouge PD or other area police departments
as
well?
No, we've incorporated actually seven parishes. A parish in Louisiana is like a county somewhere else. We've taken this, it's the capital area, they call it, and it's seven parishes. And right now we've outfitted, I think we just had a board meeting, and I think we're up to 14 agencies that we've completed.
That is amazing. What a life-saving effort that is. I mean, you're literally going to save the lives of police officers with this.
Well, that's our hope. That's our goal here. When we saw what those wives went through, and they, by the way, they're on our board. They dedicated themselves to being involved in this because they didn't want to see what happened to their husbands happen to anybody else. And they become spokespersons for our foundation, and they go to every event and talk to people and explain to them how important this is, that we don't have to worry about this happening to anybody else. And the fact, and I don't know if you realize this, but in March of this year, we had another fatal shooting of a deputy here, East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's deputy.
Yes.
In Baton Rouge. And the sad thing about that is after all we had been through and we were still equipping the East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office, he did not have on a vest.
Oh, no. That's tragic.
Well, we had another problem that threw a kink into everything too, was the flood we had here of last year in August, and a lot of these officers' homes were flooded and they lost their vests. So we replaced those fairly quickly. So we got those guys in vests as soon as we could. So we were making our way through this. We just hadn't gotten there yet. Unfortunately, it's just. I wish I could wave that magic wand and about $10 million would appear in that bank account I got and we could just do what we wanted. But we work our butts off to get that money in the bank. I mean, it's almost become a full-time job for me and other members of our board just to collect. We speak at every event we can, and we hold a number of fundraisers a year just to keep this effort going.
And who are the board members? Let's just want to say a thank you to them.
Well, what we did when we originally set up was we wanted to get a good cross section of our community with influential people that we thought could carry the weight and collect money. One of them is Leo Verde, who is the general manager of Sullivan Steakhouse here in Baton Rouge. You probably heard of Del Frisco's. It's the same chain.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
Clay Young is a businessman here who does a lot of advertising and promotions. We have one of the best CPA firms in Baton Rouge. They're on board, and they're one of their partners is involved on the board. They do all our CPA work. We have one of the biggest law firms here in Baton Rouge, Keene Miller, that does all our legal work. They've handled all the successions for the wives, got all their paperwork done, and they've just been such a help to us. We've got two major hospitals in Baton Rouge that have been so important to our cause. Our Lady of the Lake Hospital here in Baton Rouge and Woman's Hospital, both of them have representatives on our board. And so it's just we have a bank vice president that handles our financing. So we went out and got the best people we could to put on this board. And so far, they've just been unbelievable, to be honest with you.
That's so refreshing to hear that these are members of the community. They're not law enforcement, but they feel so strongly about law enforcement that they're willing to join in this effort. And it's a lot of effort, too. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's a tremendous amount. I think we all talk three or four times a day. None of these people have any law enforcement experience whatsoever. I'm actually the only one on the board that has any law enforcement experience. But they bring so much value with their other skills, their people skills, their fundraising skills, and those things are just unmatched, and it's just so valuable to us.
You know, for my listeners, what you have just heard is the textbook way to create a foundation, to find the people that have the ability within the community and the skill set to participate in a venture like this. I often get contacted by listeners and people who read my posts on Facebook about trying to create foundations and charitable organizations to help law enforcement. And many, you know, have great ideas, but don't understand the difficulty and the challenges in creating a successful organization. And so what you have just described, I urge that my listeners who have that inclination to listen to what Pat just said. And Pat, if someone needed to talk to you for possibly advice on creating a similar or a law enforcement charitable organization, how could they contact you?
Well, they can call me. I'll be glad to give them. My phone number is area code 225-933-4700, and my email account is penglade, PENGLADE, the number 1@cox.net. And on top of that, I want to we try not to leave any stones unturned. It's pretty good to have a U.S. congressman and a U.S. senator that have joined with you to help you on your board too. Getting a 501c3 is not exactly an easy venture.
Sure.
And we got ours done in about 3 weeks, to be honest with you.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we had a senator and a U.S. representative. We had Senator Bill Cassidy and Congressman Garrett Graves call the IRS and said, look, this needs to be done quickly. So from the time we submitted it, finished it probably about a week and a half before we got our paperwork back.
That's called, it's nice to have friends in high places.
Well, yeah, you know, it's always good to touch those bases, and they're so involved in our organization. They're involved with the families of law enforcement officers that were killed. They've been just really good people to help us. Our community really came together on this, and they've been so helpful and so giving. And it's really been a pleasure for us to be able to do this. And on top of that, I think the police departments have always have been really, really appreciative of what we've done, especially the wives of police officers. You wouldn't believe the emails and texts I get from the wives of police officers to just say thank you for what you've done for my husband.
I think that that probably makes it feel all worthwhile to you, doesn't it?
That's it. That's the bottom line. That's all I needed to hear. If we've given those people some sort of comfort knowing that their husband or in some cases their wives have left that house that day and they've got a unit full of equipment. We're talking about a Kevlar vest, a ballistic vest, and a Kevlar helmet. It's in there in case they need it. It's just that comfort feeling, and it makes them feel better to know their husbands or wives have that available to them if they need it.
That's fantastic. And I have heard that your congressman, is it Graves? Is that his name?
Yes, Garrett Graves.
Garrett Graves. I've heard that he put forth some very important legislation recently, too, concerning injured police officers.
He is very pro-law enforcement. Everything that we've talked to, and I can call Garrett, I guess, because I've known him since he was a kid, and he has been so helpful to us. Everything he does is pro-law enforcement. He believes that, just like the rest of us, there are so many holes in law enforcement that need to be filled with equipment, with new laws or anything else that pertain to what we need to better do our jobs. These have been sitting around for years, and it's about time that, you know, locally and nationally, and they get off their butts and they start doing something to ensure that people will know that this country cares about them and what they do here.
And I think that after the last few years of the onslaught of anti-law enforcement rhetoric by the media and by, you know, other social justice warriors, they call themselves. I call them punks myself. But the way they have degraded the American law enforcement officer publicly has led to much of the unrest and has led to probably the deaths of these officers that we're even talking about right now.
Well, you wonder what would go through a guy's mind, in this case, coming to Baton Rouge. He left St. Louis, and he drove all the way to Baton Rouge. He was just hell-bent on killing law enforcement, I'm assuming. And, you know, along the way, that's a pretty good ride from St. Louis to Baton Rouge. You figure if he had any good sense along the way, he'd have changed his mind and turned around and went back. But apparently he was so hell-bent on proving whatever point he was proving. Fortunately, because I'm not going to say unfortunately, because I'm glad that bastard's dead. Excuse me if I can't say that on radio.
It's quite all right on this channel.
What he did and why he did it, we will probably know. But the point is that he's not around for us to worry about anymore. The BRPD sniper our SWAT team did a fantastic job and probably saved more lives because the guy was hell-bent on killing as many people as he could.
Yeah, they did. They absolutely did a fantastic job on that. And while we're on this topic of the causation of some of this, it's come to my attention that the officers who were involved in the shooting, the original shooting of Alton Sterling, have basically had their entire lives uprooted and have been drained financially, emotionally, basically had to go into hiding during the entire time since the shooting because they are still on administrative leave. And even though the Department of Justice has cleared them, now there's some cry by the mayor of Baton Rouge to fire them.
I'm not really sure what that's about. I'm sure it has something to do with politics, which I don't like. But you're absolutely right. These guys, and I know their families, both of these guys, they're both good kids. They went out, they got themselves put in a situation and nobody in hell would have asked for. Nobody, I'm not sure why anybody thinks that police go out and look for somebody to shoot for, because it changes their whole lives and typically ruins their lives. So that thought process is so ridiculous, I'm not even going to go there. But the fact is that these two guys will never work for the BRPD again. They will probably never work in law enforcement again, strictly because of the way the public and some people in leadership roles here have handled this from the very beginning. And it's a shame that these guys have had to go through this. I don't know what's going to happen. This week's going to be very telling here in Baton Rouge. The mayor's pretty much put down the gauntlet that she expects the chief of police to fire these two guys. I'm not too sure what they would fire them for at this point in time. I think that all that's going to do is open up more civil litigation here, and this thing's just going to get crazier by the minute. But you're absolutely right. I mean, nobody thinks about the aftermath of one of these shootings and what these officers have to deal with. And it's bad enough that they've had to take someone's life, but on top of that, they've had to deal with their whole lives being turned upside down now, and where they will land, I have no idea, and I don't think they do either.
It's disgraceful. It's reminiscent of Darren Wilson's, with his tragedy as well. You know, there's another guy that all he did was protect his own life and do his duty, and his life was ruined because of that, and because of the politics of the situation, not the facts, just the politics.
Well, what you create here is, you know, if I'm a policeman on the streets now, and you can't say you don't think of it, I don't want to be the next one that ends up in this situation. What does that mean? I'm going to underreact to something, and I'm going to get killed because I'm scared I'm going to end up in that situation. We've created a horrible scenario here for law enforcement that we don't get behind them and back them in these kind of situations. And we're going to create this whole situation where we got officers underreacting just because they don't want to be faced with these similar situations. I think that's a horrible precedent to set in this country.
You're absolutely right. And we have seen police officers underreact, just as you said, and the ramifications have in some cases been deadly, and we're also seeing as a direct result police officers not being as proactive as they used to be because they don't want to get into a jackpot, so they are not being as aggressive as they once were. And
well,
who can blame them?
These guys, and I've seen the films, I've seen everything involved with these two police officers, they used everything they could have used before they used deadly force. They went right down the force continuum the way it was supposed to be done. Verbal commands, they tased him twice. They kept telling him, get on the hood, get on the hood, get on the hood, and he just would not get on the hood, and it ended up that he was starting to wrestle with him on the ground with a gun in his pocket and going for the gun. At that point, there's no choice left but to do what you have to do. And I think that there's no – if you want to – you know, you always bring these sort of things back for lessons learned and academy training and those sort of things. This is a perfect example of two guys that had gotten to a very tough situation. But as far as everything I know, they handled it as well as anybody could handle it in that situation. This guy was huge. He was 6'3 or 4 and weighed over 300 pounds. And they were trying to wrestle this guy down and get him under control. And it's just, you know, trying to second guess what you would do with in that situation is stupid. I never did it as a police chief, and I don't think you can. I don't think you can put your head where theirs is at that moment in time, and what they're fearing at that moment may be the next thing. It's impossible to recreate that in your mind.
Exactly. And so I was very disappointed when after the Department of Justice cleared them just a couple weeks ago, your state's attorney general then basically threatened them with charges from the state.
Well, that's ongoing as we speak. They have got a criminal investigation in progress as we speak. So apparently, and this is after they demanded a DOJ investigation. Now, you have to understand, they didn't trust anybody locally. They didn't trust the state. They didn't trust the locals. They wanted the DOJ to come in, and that was the Obama administration at that point, and under Lynch. So that investigation was done under Obama and Lynch's helm when it was done. So I think there was this thought that if this is bad, they're going to figure it out.
Right.
So, and then when it didn't turn out the way they wanted it to turn out, well, we're mad again. We didn't want that. Let's go to something else. I don't think there's ever going to be an end to this, to be honest with you. I think this thing's going to just roll for, you know, civil suits are coming. But before July the 5th, there'll be 15 civil suits filed on this by different people involved in this.
It's pathetic. There's sometimes, you know, this is what I call the criminal injustice system. That's exactly what this is about. And people getting, you know, wanting to jump on the bandwagon for a possible cash cow, you know, looking at the deep pockets of the city. And you're absolutely right. There's no doubt that there's going to be lawsuits. And I just hope that that the politics don't play a role in that when it comes down to, you know, just paying them off in order to shut them up. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope they have the guts
to stand
up.
Well, that seems to be the history of what's going on now in this country. That's what I've seen. Let's just give them some money and hope it goes away. And in this case, I think you're setting the police up for more failure by doing that. And what becomes of these people is they become more important after they're dead than when they're alive to some people, and that's the damn shame of it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But, you know, I guess we got a little bit off topic here, but the fact of the matter is that all of these factors that we've been discussing enter into the good works that you are doing with raising money for the protection of police officers, for assisting them. And what's next in the for the foundation?
We're probably going to move to a broader spectrum. We are getting requests from other parishes in our area, and some of them we know do not have any protective equipment at all. And we, in our board meeting last week, we decided that we would reach out, and if we can afford to pay for some of these departments, especially some of the smaller ones that don't have the income and the revenue that some of the big ones do, we're going to go ahead and start buying them too. So we're going to expand our area to 11 parishes. I would venture to guess before next year and a half, we will maybe statewide by then. I would hope that all states or at least some areas decide to do this because it's needed. It's a great idea. There's the number of agencies out there that have no equipment at all, and I know that's hard for people to believe, but it's true.
While we're talking, I'll bet you that most of my listeners and most of the American public don't know what the starting salaries for police officers in that area. Why don't you go ahead and enlighten them about that little fact?
Well, I think the last time I heard it, the starting salary for a police officer in Baton Rouge was around
$30,000. $30,000. We're asking these men and women to quite literally put their lives on the line for $30,000, and then we're not even going to give them the protective equipment to save their lives. It's insane.
Well, there's things like the crime cameras and all that. They seem to need to be buying instead of vests. That's one of my arguments, is that prioritizing things is always been a big deal for me. I think you need to prioritize anything you do and make sure you've covered your people. Your people are your whole organization. If you don't take care of your people, you have no organization. So if that's not your focus and your main priority, then there's a problem. And anything else is going to fall behind paying, taking care of, and protecting your people first. That ought to be your first line of business.
I wish that you could whisper that in the ear of every single law enforcement leader in this country, because you have just hit it right on the head. Well, you know, Chief, I want to say this. How can my listeners help your endeavor? How can they donate?
They can go online to our account. We have a web page and we have a Facebook page, but you can go to Capital Area Law Enforcement Foundation, CALEF.LA, and you can donate. But I would encourage everybody to make sure that, you know, if you have law enforcement people out there, and we know that these guys are not being protected, and I think we need to start raising hell about that. I think there needs to be a unified voice out there that says we have got to protect these people. And I don't think it's going to come out of the federal government. But if not, I think you need to form a foundation. And we'll be glad to help you get through the steps if you need to. It's not easy, but it was worth everything we had to put into it as far as I'm concerned.
I admire you greatly. I really do, and your efforts. And I agree with you. That's why this radio show exists. This is Blue Lives Radio. It is the voice of American law enforcement, and it's part of Blue Lives Matter. So we are doing our best to get the word out about these very, very important topics. And I'm going to post your information as well as so my listeners can grab onto it on our website. And I really thank you for not only doing everything that you're doing to make the lives of law enforcement officers safer and their families happier, but for your police career that spanned more than three decades. I thank you so much for being on the show, and I hope to talk to you again anytime that you want to get a message out.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Look, you're doing a great service to America. These guys need everything they can get and just something to hang on to. And if we don't come together somehow, this is never going to work. And what you do will help this cause, and we'll be better and better. So thank you for what you do also.
Thank you, and we'll talk again soon.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we honor those law enforcement officers who have given their lives in the line of duty. Last week, it was a happy week. I didn't have to read any names. Unfortunately, this week, I have three names to read and a fourth who has not yet been identified. So, for the first one, Border Patrol Agent Isaac Morales, United States Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection. Border Patrol Agent Isaac Morales succumbed to wounds sustained 4 days earlier when he was stabbed in an unprovoked attack in El Paso, Texas. Agent Morales and several friends were walking to their cars in the 12,000 block of Tierra Este when they were confronted by the subject. Agent Morales identified himself as a United States Border Patrol agent in an attempt to defuse the situation. The man then attacked him with a knife and stabbed him in the eye. Despite the wound, Agent Morales chased the subject with several witnesses. The man was subdued and taken into custody by responding officers. Agent Morales was transported to a local hospital, where he remained in critical condition until passing away on May 24th. Agent Morales had served with Border Patrol Service for 8 years and was assigned to the Isleta Border Patrol Station. His end of watch, May 24th, 2017. The second law enforcement officer
Special Agent Michael T. Walter of the Virginia State Police. Special Agent Michael Walter was shot and killed in the 1900 block of Red Street in Richmond, Virginia, while investigating a suspicious vehicle at approximately 7:30 p.m. He and several Richmond Police Department officers were conducting high-visibility patrols in the Mosby Court public housing complex due to a recent trend of shootings and other crime. The officers were approaching a vehicle parked facing the wrong direction on Red Street. As they spoke to the two occupants of the vehicle, the passenger opened fire on them, striking Agent Walter. Special Agent Walter was transported to the VCU Medical Center, where he succumbed to his wounds early the following morning. The subject who shot him fled the scene, but was arrested in Northumberland County, Virginia, several hours later. Special Agent Walter was a U.S. Marine Corps veteran. He had served with the Virginia State Police for 18 years and was assigned to the Bureau of Criminal Investigation's Drug Enforcement Section. He survived by his wife, daughter, and two sons. Special Agent Michael T. Walter, Virginia State Police. End of watch, Saturday, May 27th, 2017. The third officer to die in the line of duty this week, Deputy Sheriff William Durr of the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office in Mississippi. Deputy Sheriff William Durr was shot and killed while responding to a domestic disturbance at 2871 Lee Drive in Bogachito, Mississippi at approximately 11:30 p.m. When he arrived at the scene, a male subject shot and killed him before murdering three females at the home. The subject then drove to two more locations in Brookhaven, where he murdered four more people. He was taken into custody the following morning after attempted suicide by cop. Deputy Durr had served with the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office for 2 years, previously served with the Brookhaven Police Department for 2 years. Deputy Sheriff William Durr, Lincoln County Sheriff's Office, Mississippi, end of watch, Saturday, May 27th, 2017. They gave their lives in the line of duty. May they rest in peace.
I want to thank you so much for joining in and listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I really do appreciate it, and I hope that you are enjoying these shows. I would really love your input. You can email me at randysutton@americaoutloud.com. I'd love your input. If you have a guest that you think would be an interesting guest for this show, please let me know, suggest them, and I'll do my best to bring them on the show. Once again, I want to thank those that make this show possible. That is that BlueLivesMatter.blue, that is the Blue Lives Matter movement. Our website, BlueLivesMatter.blue, is the news and information website. And Warrior12.com, which is the product line for Blue Lives Matter. They got the coolest t-shirts, and now they've got these hot and cold cups that I forget what they're called, but they're some type of famous name, and they keep everything hot, they keep everything cold, and at Police Week, they sold like hotcakes. Apparently, everybody loves them. So check them out, warrior12.com. And once again, if you aren't aware of it, I have a number of books. True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, A Cop's Life, and True Blue to Protect and Serve. And I'd love for you to take a look at them. Go to Amazon.com, look me up, and if you want to contact me, RandyLSutton.com. Thanks. See you next week.